Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformations. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx speaker, performance enhancement expert, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 58 countries, such as the U.S., India, Canada, France, Australia, Belgium, Panama, the Netherlands, all around the world. I want to thank you to those who are tuning in. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformations. Here, we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that has changed our lives and how we use this to help transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Tuesday through Friday. Join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community, and join in the conversations inside of that group with the guests, the listeners, and myself. On the show, I have entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, podcasters, authors, and other specialists who are impacting the world around them. And my guest today does exactly that. If you have a question for any guest that I bring on the show, this is a live show, so you can call in at 657-383-1109. Again, the number, 657-383-1109. My team is standing by to field the calls and your questions. So please help me welcome to the show Dr. Colleen Mullen. How are you doing today?
Hi, Sean. I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
I am super pumped to have you on the show. We've been talking for a little while, and I'm excited to do this because I think this is a topic that a lot of people don't want to talk about, but I think is very necessary to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think we're going to have a great conversation, and you know, and I'm looking forward to any of the calls that might come in. That'll be exciting to take
as
well.
Definitely. So the title of this episode is Coaching Through Chaos with Dr. Colleen Mullen. I'm going to have some questions about some of the stuff that I talk about, but you are LMFT. What is that?
Right. It's a licensed marriage and family therapist. So that comes with my master's degree, and that's my state board license to practice therapy. And then I also have my doctorate degree in the same in marriage and family therapy.
Marriage and family therapy. That's awesome.
Yes. Which means that I'm a systemic psychologist, means that I take the person in the context of the life that they live, look at them in the environment, that they're not their diagnosis. They're a part of an environmental system and a biological system, which affects them at any given time.
Very cool. Very cool. So you are the founder of Coaching Through Chaos Private Practice in San Diego, California, and of the podcast of the same name. You also co-host Shrink to Shrink on Film podcast, like that. You've been featured in over 80 online publications, TV, radio shows, podcasts, including Fortune, Success, Everyday Power Blog, love that one, Glamour, Psych Central, The Huffington Post, and is a relationship columnist for the B Quarterly magazine. You specialize in outpatient addiction treatment, relationships in conflict, treating symptoms of anxiety, depression, and PTSD. And what you enjoy most is helping your clients work through their transitions in their life. Very, very awesome stuff.
Thanks,
I think
Sean.
That everything there – oh, you're welcome. I think that everything there is much needed, you know, for addiction treatment, working with PTSD, because I think that a lot of these symptoms, a lot of these behavioral things that happen are deeper than what we really see. People drink for certain reasons, You know, they're depressed. They have anxiety. There's reason. We need to get to that root cause. And I believe that that is what you do.
That is. And that is what the hope of, you know, deep psychotherapy is about, is wanting to look at when did they start using and how did they start using? Because even when you talk about PTSD and addictions, I mean, we could also say a lot of that even goes hand in hand. But many people, when we talk about like even combat, you know, veterans and PTSD with addictions, many of them, even though started drinking when they were younger, you know, but maybe now it's full blown alcoholism that goes along with the PTSD because there's a lack of coping. Because if you start drinking at 14, 15 years old, you don't learn how to cope with stress because you're already learning that you can wash it away with a couple of beers or a fifth of vodka or whatever it's going to be, or smoke it away with some pot. And so what we do in therapy then, so somebody comes to us at 35 years old, combat veteran with PTSD and alcoholism, you know, yeah, we're going to help them manage the trauma symptoms that they're dealing with in the moment, but we're also going to go back and do the deep work that goes through their life stages and their life history and look at how they learned to cope, what they did to cope, when they started using substances, and when it became something that they used to cope, and then we start retraining them and kind of helping them conceptualize themselves differently and looking at maybe even forgiving themselves along the way for certain things that they did because they weren't coping well. So the whole journey should be healing for them.
Oh, yeah,
and
definitely.
Should be, and as your show says, and should be transformational.
Can we just dispel the myths and rumors and everything right now and say that you don't have to be a combat veteran to have PTSD?
Oh, absolutely not. In fact, I have a little PTSD myself. You know, and one of the things now, there's new criteria, and I'm not going to go too, you know, medical, technical people, but there's new criteria. And two of the ways that you can get exposed to trauma specifically are geared towards like people in the helping professions, and it's through exposure to stories of trauma. So whether it's, you know, and whether it's like cops that are exposed to, you know, murder scenes or gang violence repeatedly, and they're having to go and tell the families of the deaths, or like therapists. I worked with foster care system for 10 years. And you hear stories of abuse that nobody needs to know, the stuff that therapists that work with kids who have been abused here. And you know, and so that's vicarious trauma you can have from hearing the stories. You actually can develop trauma symptoms. That is not what mine comes from, but work was also to help therapists not adopt vicarious trauma. But in any case, so you can get vicarious trauma. That's one of the new criteria. And then there's another one that I think is new, but I wouldn't swear by it, but it's that you can just get it from witnessing something. So witnessing a car accident, you might not be the person in the accident, but you're on the freeway and you watch a major accident. Or maybe I think of something very graphic, you know, for impact is like a motorcycle accident that's fatal, right? You witness that. You don't have any personal connection to the person that you just witnessed die, but you certainly can have trauma symptoms from an experience like that. And so you can witness trauma that happens to other people and end up with PTSD. And I should say, I know a lot of people out there that are listening are probably just going with PTS, and that's fine. However, people want to conceptualize it. A lot of people don't want to adopt it as a disorder. Just technically, we're used to saying PTSD. So I want to respect that side of the audience too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the first question that I always ask on the show is why? Like, why do anything? You know, I believe that we're set on this path that we're on because of something that has happened, something we get a jolt into this direction and we get a strong, deep why. So I wonder for you, what is your deep why? Why be a family marriage therapist? Why do you deal with anxiety? Why did you choose that? What is your deep why for what you do?
Yeah. Well, it is very personal. And so I went into this profession many years after I initially dreamed of it, but it was because I grew up and I was one of many kids in my family, one of five, and for whatever reason, I was singled out and was physically abused from a young age by my mother. And we've since repaired that relationship over the years. So, but what happened was, as a child, though, I had an experience at 13 with a therapist that was horrific. And it was just, I knew enough at that time that there were the whole situation with a husband and wife therapist. And just sure. at the time, I knew that there were things going on where I couldn't scenario. And this is in the 80s. Like, I wonder where, like, CPS reports were back then, but there was never any intervention on our family. And we had one of those families that was, you know, successful parent, you know, single, my father was successful in his profession. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. There was five kids to be raised. I get that she was doing what she could do. But I had this bad experience at 13, but then when I was 17, I left home with a serious, head injury and went to a therapist, and I don't remember how I got there, but I remember bringing my dad to him. So I had gone to him already a couple of times, and I brought my dad to the session, and this therapist advocated for me. And he told my father, he said, you know, he's like, Colleen is like the smartest one in this house because she's going to save her own life. Like, you need to make sure she's safe outside of the house, but she needs to not go back home. She got herself out. You can afford to help her out, to stay out. Like, I hadn't graduated high school yet. It was a few more weeks right. until then. And, you know, and he said, you know, you need to make sure that she's stays out of the house. And I thought, oh my God, like someday I want to do that for someone. And, you know, and as things go, life doesn't happen that all of a sudden my life was better because I was out of the house. Cause in fact, then I ended up, my dad, you know, thought I was staying at some friends, but you know, when people take in straight teenagers, things usually don't go well. So I actually didn't last there for more than a couple of days, and I ended up sleeping in my car for about 3 weeks over high school graduation, and nobody really many years later. So yeah, I drove around some sleepless nights in my car. Thankfully I had a car and, like, early on the street. I could stay, like, in neighborhoods that I knew and stuff. And
sure.
So that's the short version of that, is that that happened. And then I kind of floundered around in my 20s for a bit and always wanted to be a therapist because I had that idea that, oh gosh, I wish I could do that for somebody someday and just advocate for them and make them feel strong and make them feel smart, make them feel like they know what is best for them. Which was the feeling that I had from that therapist. But because I had been abused for many years, I didn't think much of anything of myself. I had very low self-esteem. I never thought anybody would take me seriously. So that led to some really self-destructive behaviors in my 20s. And at some point I got my life together at around 28, decided to go back to school, and I was on a mission and went back to the university here, a big university in New York, and just started registering for classes and figured, well, they'll give me the degree when I finish all my classes. And I did about 2.5 years of college to finish up my undergraduate degree in a year and a half. I don't even know how I did it. And I worked overnight on a suicide hotline so I could get that letter for graduate school. Yeah, I had like a 24-hour day once a week, and I couldn't even think about that now. But and then I went and moved myself to California for graduate school, didn't know anybody, and it was like the day after my 30th birthday, drove across the country to go to graduate school. And I thought the worst that has happened is I'll come back to New York with a doctorate degree in California. And now it's been a long time. It's been almost 20 years. So, so that's my why, is I wanted to help somebody feel the way that I felt through the therapy that I had done. And and I'm very grateful and proud to say that I believe that I've done that and that I hope I continue to do that. So
well, that's awesome. You know, I
thank you.
This is what I love about the show, right? I mean, this is what I love, is that, you know, you see the picture of perfection, right? You see somebody who is changing lives. You see somebody who is at the top of their game. They're literally transforming people, you know, in the mind, in the soul. But yet when you peel back the onion, they slept in their car.
Yes.
And they were floundering in their 20s.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just so amazed. You know, every time I hear somebody's story, I'm like, that is incredible. Like,
yeah.
you weren't at the top of your class in high school, and you didn't like dominate college, and you didn't like invent the new cure for whatever disease. Like success wasn't like at every turn for you.
Not at all.
A lot of people think that that's the way it has to be. Like, they're so successful. Oh my God, they're so successful. Why do you think there's no like 20-year-old PhDs? Not that it takes forever, it's because we don't know what the hell's going on.
We're in college, we're drinking, partying. Yep, and that's why I do even some of the interviews that I do, and I go so honestly, like I am with you here, is that, you know, our profession is one that is supposed to be, we're supposed to be blank slates, and it's not about us and everything else, but we're living in a world that's so different than those rules when they were developed in our profession, and now you can find anything you want out about somebody. So I try to be pretty authentic, I don't sit in my therapy rooms and go, oh yeah, I was abused too, and this is what happened when my mom did this to me. I don't do that, but my story's out there. If anybody looks at my Facebook, is public. I put everything public, and if anybody even sees my page today, I put up a thing about like, it's okay not to be perfect and, you know, have bad days and make mistakes, because I am relating to that. I'm going through some stuff with my family right now as my mom transitions out of her life, and I'm in a really stressful place and needed that little message today. So I put it out there and hope that other people might get that as well. So, I try not to ever put out there that, you know, I know more, I'm better than, or anything else. And I don't judge people because nobody would believe where I was 25, 30 years ago.
Right. Yeah. So I love the, what do you call it? The I don't know, it's not a proverb. It's a like a motivational statement or something that I heard this one time and I thought, I was like, wow, that's gotta be the greatest thing I've ever heard, was that, you know, people are broken in their own way. And people are dealing with things in their own way. Okay. And people, you never know what people are battling with or struggling with or whatever, but even though you may be broken, right? Broken crayons still color.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, yes. Yes.
Right. And crack,
like it was almost like a
ceramic, give it character.
Yeah. Like if you look at any porcelain dish, there's like a little, there are hairline cracks, little like, it could be bone china, ivory china. But if you look at it, mostly the ivory china will have these little cracks and little things, and, you know, it kind of gives it the character, you know. But I just, oh man, when I heard that, I'm like, broken. I was like, they do. And we know what we do. We throw those broken crayons away. We do. We go through our, like, I think every parent has done this, right? Every parent has done this where they've gone through like, all of your crayons are broken. They're all junk. What are you doing with these broken crayons? You know, and then you throw them away. And then if you translate that to people, like some people might be broken. You know, they went through a traumatic brain injury. They have PTSD. We're in horrible car wreck. They've had strokes. There's things that people are born with, like Down syndrome and other things. Like if you look at the whole world as a whole, that's what we deal with, right? You got MS, you've got all these things.
Yes.
And even though society, mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, and that's why I even ended up working with addicts. And specifically doing a lot of addiction work. I've run a large treatment center and everything else. Because I loved, I mean, these were people that nobody cared about anymore. Like literally, I worked with guys that were straight out, like 165 guys in this place, straight out of prison or homelessness. And nobody cared. They thought they were like toss away kind of people, and they were just no good for anything. And you know, and you see people make transitions, and you see when they really make those changes that say, no, I'm better than I was, and I can be better, and I don't need this to rely on. And they truly transform their lives. And in the addiction field, I always look at it as the person that is doing that transition. Like The therapist sits there as the witness and the kind of coach to help them. But they are doing, I think it's the most transformational work people can do when they give up an addiction, because they are so, like, they are biologically and physiologically stuck on it, that when they get the strength and figure out how to do that and then learn how not to relapse on that, man, it's amazing. I mean, I know people that were like, you know, that would come up to me and tell me stories of, you know, not remembering robbing a liquor store to get money for their heroin and waking up in jail. And now they are, you know, coordinators at rehabs for the last 30 years. And they're just beautiful people.
Transformation.
And yeah, it's just, it's amazing. So that's how I even got into, like, specializing in addiction treatment. And also, yeah, and for me, because of that messed up time in my 20s, like, I knew it was always a fine line for me. And it always took going to therapy to stop me from going to that point where I wouldn't have any control. And so, you know, so on the end of recovery, I think addiction, binge, whatever looks, you know, however people get help for themselves, you know, one way isn't better than the other. And there's a lot of judgment out in the world about recovery. And I just say, like, what works for one person may not work for the next 10 people, but if it works for that one person, that's good, you know? And because there's 10 other avenues for other people to get recovery as well.
Yeah, definitely. I know in the military, we've got something called ADAPT, which is alcohol and drug abuse and prevention and treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of guys will get like a alcohol related incident. I was an ADAPT a couple times. I was so good at abusing alcohol, I had to go to class twice. Battled with alcohol, many deployments in the military. I didn't deal with childhood abuse on all fronts. Never dealt with it. I was drinking at 17 and 18, and you know, I was working in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. Like, I would shovel snow, rake leaves, cut grass, you know, just to make money so that we would have money. When you have a drug addict in your house, like, my stepfather was a cocaine addict and an alcoholic. So that's what we grew up with, you know, domestic violence. Drug abuse, alcohol abuse. And so that's all I knew from, you know, first grade to seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I started drinking.
So do you recognize, so without going too much into psychobabbling you, but do you recognize at this point that you had trauma before you entered the military into deployments, that you had new trauma later on, but you get that
you
had trauma as a kid,
huge.
Even though you weren't abused, because that's one of the other criteria when we think about, you know, that trauma criteria. You know, we know that children that witness domestic violence are as much vulnerable to trauma symptoms as the ones who are abused. So, you know, there's that with the drug addiction, which means that there was emotionally unavailable adults in your house, and then possibly, you know, and then witnessing the abuse. So yeah, so you had it hard, and then we're drinking, and then went to the military. So yeah, it sounds like you've definitely got, you know, have come a long way in your story as well.
Well, there was some therapy, you know.
Sure.
You know, I think that, like, literally, I don't know. I think there's some misconception. I think society dictates a lot of our decisions, and I think or feel that when people say, "Oh, you need a therapist," there's something wrong with you. There's something broken. There's something. You're gonna be labeled as, you know, I can't tell anybody I'm seeing a therapist. I can't tell anybody. Oh my gosh, but you would be surprised at how many people actually go to therapy, whether it be marriage counseling, whether it be just someone to talk to, you know what I'm saying. So, you know, through that time, right around, you know, sixth, seventh grade, through my senior year, through, like, I think junior year of high school, about 5 or 6 years solid every week. We would go every week because my mom needed it. I needed it. My older sister needed it. I think my younger sister was too young to really be abused. But I've been thrown across the room, you know, hit and punched and whatever else, you know, as a kid. So, I mean, I dealt with it. You know, when he was done with my mom, he come beat on me for a while.
Oh, so, interesting, though. Yeah, because you'd started out by saying you weren't abused as a child, but you certainly were. Maybe not.
Yeah, it didn't
Maybe
start not. Out that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't start out that way. You know, it was, it's like little by little. Like, it's little things. You know?
Well, it's the and progression.
Like, really weird,
it's the progression of his sickness with the addiction and the anger. You know, he progressed over the years. You got older and were able to maybe speak up or posture yourself in a way that wanted to protect mom. And you were, you know, it's you know, very, you know, unfortunately, it's a common scenario.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, nobody nobody starts a relationship being abused because nobody would want to be in that relationship. You
that's
know,
right, but, and that's the problem, that when the abuse starts in the relationships, because that's one of my one of the other things that I love to work with, the people in conflict. We don't do active domestic violence. Those people, you know, like need to get some other work on the actual like domestic violence stuff that they're doing. But once they're done and can make a contract that they know they're not going to hit each other or somebody's not going to hit the other, you know, high conflict couples, I love working with, because you know the problem is once that abuse happens, you know, it's all that emotional stuff that then gets involved that says, oh, I should stay, but I feel this way already about it. And, you know, and you've got to work through, you know, can the behavior be changed? You know, is that person willing to do all the work that they need to do independently and in the relationship to change it so that they are no longer an abuser? You know, and can that other person, can the victim, you know, be someone strong enough to really set the boundaries that say this is never going to happen to me again, and feel safe in doing that. But you know, the thing is, you know, when there's conflict in the relationships, you know, a lot of growth happens in the couple's room in therapy, because one person will often witness the other one's growth. And that's really healing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for that abuse victim to witness the perpetrator, you know, break down and talk about where all their anger comes from, and, you know, or make the connections in their life that say, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, is very healing and cathartic for that, for the partner to witness, so that they go, he gets it, you know? So, but you were saying though, we started this by saying that, you know, people have this misconception about going to a therapist. And yes, and I think that the days of like the pipe, brackets and stuff, and you know, a person who like lays out on the couch and, you know, somebody just listens and doesn't say anything, you know, there's still a few people around like that, but for the most part it's people who genuinely want to help people make the changes that they want to make in life. So the way that I look at therapy is that somebody will come to me and say, this isn't working for me anymore. And I'll say, well, what would you like your life to look like? And then we'll go through that. What would you change if you could change anything about your relationship today? And that's where we start. And we start looking at how to make the connections, and how do we start, you know, how do I start teaching them to either act differently, interact, you know, or react differently or not react, in order to achieve their goals. And so, you know, it's very much a proactive situation. And I'll say it's also, there's a world out there of all these coaches too. And I know even my business name is called Coaching Through Chaos, and it actually is born out of chaos theory in my doctorate work, but it's a clever name for a business. It works. And it, which was also born out of running that large rehab. It was an addiction focused theory of behavior change. But, you know, there's a whole world of coaches, and where therapy is different from coaching is that, you know, although there's a lot of us out there that are proactive therapists, where we might help a person kind of guide them along in a way that a coach does, you know, coaches aren't trained to go back and make those early connections to say, oh, well, you understand that that was your stepfather's, you know, cycle of abuse happening, and his addiction was growing deeper, and you were getting older, and blah, blah, blah. And that's why at 35, you might have been whatever condition you were in after the military and some trauma. So, you know, coaches are not trained to do the deep past work. You know, if they are trained at all, and there are some very, very good coaches out there. So I want to make that clear. But there's a lot of people out there that think, oh, I have good intentions, so I'm going to help somebody. So what those, you know, many coaches, where they focus on is, what do you want to change today? And how do I make you do something different tomorrow? But there's no examining or exploring the past. And inevitably the past often comes up to hit the person in the face again at some point, whether it's in a relationship, whether it's struggling with relapse, whatever the case is. So, you know, coaches definitely have their place, but when you have things like trauma, whether it's current stuff, where it's, you know, a car accident or combat or child abuse, or it's past stuff, you know, that happened in your childhood, you know, that's when therapy can come into play. When you have complex relational dynamics, you know, if you're a happy couple and you want some premarital coaching, great, go to a premarital coach. But if you are already having repeated arguments with your partner and you can't seem to get unstuck from them, you need a licensed relationship therapist. So, you know, yeah.
So
I realize I could keep going on and on. So,
you're great. No, you're great. It's great information that people need to hear. I'm interested in quickly tell me one of the best parts about your own transformation thus far. You know, you're floundering in your 20s, sleeping in a car, you know, what have you, up until, you know, you got your doctorate and you opened the practice. And even today, I mean, think about your whole journey so far. Like, okay, tell
I know what answer I'm going to give you. Because for me, it's easy. The fact that I'm sitting here with a microphone and, talking to you on a podcast publicly about my life and also as an authority in my field, that is the most transformational thing, because I was quiet, mousy, and then even just feeling confident about, you know, my outward self. You know, I thought I was hideous. I was awkward. I didn't make friends easily because I was so painfully, painfully shy. I was self-destructive, and I never thought, and that's why I didn't go back to school until I was 28, because I never thought anybody would ever listen to anything I had to say. I was like, why would they listen to me? Like, what, and why would anybody think I could help them in life? And the fact that now, like, I'm so proud of the work that I've done. And now I even mentor therapists back in San Diego. I have a team of therapists, and a couple of them were actual former students of mine. I'm just, you know, really, really proud of that. But the fact that, like, I write and put my own words out there as an authority, and people pay for that, I'm like, wow, how did that happen? And so, like, that's it. And I'll walk into any room and, you know, talk to people, and I have a good reputation as a business owner in San Diego because I'm out in the public with everybody. I host shows. I mean, I nobody would ever think that I was painfully shy in the past. And here I am. So when you ask me what's the most transformational, the fact that I'm even sitting here doing this and I'm not holed up in a corner reading a book somewhere, you know, for the next 50 years is transformational.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Very cool.
I get excited.
So
I don't believe I'm happy to be able to say that. Yeah.
Well, that's good. You know, I don't believe that it's all sunshine and rainbows. You know, like we were talking earlier, like, you know, I like how people say I was a 10 year overnight success. Right.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
it took
me
10, 12 years, you know, whatever. So, I mean, is sleeping in your car one of the worst moments along that journey? I mean, was that would you say it was probably one of the worst parts about your transformation?
I had some other things that I don't go too much into in my 20s that I'll say were worse, and I'm glad I came out alive out of. The driving around in my car, like, it's funny, like, and I work with some, or I know some former homeless youth in San Diego that I'm close to. And, you know, I think they have similar experiences that, like, once you get out of the house that's scary or the place that's harmful to you, you know, even though I was alone and it was a little scary to be out there in the middle of the night by myself, like, I was safe. And as long as I stayed in my car and I drove around for a few hours, you know, nothing was going to happen to me, so I could breathe. And so staying in the car was, I was really just kind of more concerned, like, gosh, I don't want my dad to find out, because I didn't want him to feel bad, because I knew that, you know, with all the rest of the kids at home, like, he thought he had did what he was supposed to do for me, and I couldn't bring him to tell him that I can bring myself to tell him that I had gotten, you know, that that place didn't work out and I got kicked out for some teenage reason. And, you know, I didn't want him to, I didn't want him to feel bad. I didn't want him to feel guilty. And that was my own, you know, like my own little codependency back then of wanting to take care of everybody else when I'm driving around my car at 17 in the middle of the night. But, no, I mean, so there's some really bad experiences that stand out when I was younger, but then, yeah, the worst ones happened when I was floundering around in my 20s and doing some really self-destructive things. And I'm pretty happy to now.
Very cool.
So, yeah, that's as much as I'll say on that one for now.
Yeah. No worries. So
So
I'm curious who your influencers are. Is there people, because I'm not familiar with the space, you know, there's always these gurus like Tony Robbins and the Grant Cardone for real estate and this guy. I mean, is there certain like influential, like therapists or doctors or somebody that, everybody's watching Grey's Anatomy, right? Is there a Harper Avery, like in your world that everybody like clings to or is influenced by?
Yes. And I'll tell you the both of them have since passed on, but I was, I had the ability to have as a professor for, 3 semesters, and 2 of them were like active, like him watching me do therapy. His name is Jay Haley, and he's the father of strategic family therapy. When you mentioned Tony Robbins, it's funny. His ex-wife, Chloe Madonis, is the partner with Tony Robbins on the strategic institute that they have. So she branched off and many, many years later teamed up with Tony Robbins because they developed this in the 50s. But Jay Haley is the father of strategic family therapy. And I had the, I love getting thrown in the ring to kind of prove myself. So the way that Jay would train therapists is he'd be on the backside of a mirror window that you could look through that the clients couldn't see you on. And, I would be in the room with the client for like an initial intake session. We'd bring them onto campus. They would know that they were part of our, you know, study student work that we were doing. And there'd be a little computer monitor back when there's computer monitors with dials on them and stuff. And him and the rest of the class would sit behind the window and he would say, tell her to say this. And he would come up with a question or something and it would flash on the computer screen and it would only stay for 2 seconds. And you had to like see it, log it in your head and put it away.
Oh, and you had
to ask it right away. And if you didn't ask it within a certain like couple of seconds, maybe 30 seconds, he would flash the screen again at you, like ask her. And the client couldn't see any of this going on. They knew that I was getting messages somehow, but they couldn't see the screen flashing. And you would just sit there going, oh my God, there's like 10 people and Jay Haley sitting behind the window waiting for me to ask this question. I better just ask it. And you learn to just kind of get comfortable with being uncomfortable with the uncovering process that you do when you start working with a new client. So I was trained by Jay Haley, so strategic family therapy, and then had the opportunity it's funny, Tony Robbins keeps coming up, on a day when I also got to meet Tony Robbins at one of the Evolution of Psychotherapy conferences back in 2007, I think it was. And it was Salvador Mnuchin, who is structural family therapy, and he's from Argentina. And he sat next to me by chance at one of these presentations. And as soon as I saw it, I was in the middle of writing my doctorate work as well. And I was like, oh my gosh, Dr. Mnuchin. I'm like, can I ask you some questions? And we literally went out into the hallway and he let me ask him some questions specifically about his theory and about how I wanted to merge the theory with strategic family therapy, with structural family therapy as an effective way of working with clients. And it was nice to get his endorsement and then be able to then work with Jay Haley. So yeah, I had some people that were big influences. Right now, you know, people love Brené Brown and her research. Her books definitely have some relevance among myself and my peers as one of the current day gurus of therapy work. Mm-hmm. And she's all about resilience and, self-worth. Yes. And so she's wonderful. And, you know, oh, well, you know, and then there's, you know, Virginia Satir and stuff, lots of people in the past.
Yep.
There's not a lot of current ones. You know, that's why we write some new theories like the one I wrote. No, we try to do some new work because, you know, really, you know, there's always room for developing new ways of looking at transforming people's lives.
Yeah. And that's what I love about, like, I do a lot of work with resilience. I'm a master resilience trainer in the Air Force. And so, you know, we talk about like the broaden and build theory with Barbara Fredrickson, you know, and what that looks like and how that translates into your life. You know, we talk about the London cab driver research, you know, the white bear phenomena and, you know, things like this that I'm like, man, it's just so fascinating. like I love the research part and like how somebody figures out that if this does this, then this will happen. You know,
yes.
So I love that stuff, you know, and how it translates into application. That's the fun part for me.
Oh, right. And when you can, like, you know, shed light on something for someone to say, you know what, and maybe tell them about one of those studies you were just talking about that, you know, when this happened, and then people put it together and they go, oh, you mean like when this happens in my life, this can happen over here? And when people start to get it and relate it to themselves, that's when, you know, you start to see a lot of growth. You know, it's wonderful. And there are a lot of people out there doing a lot of good work. And with all the suicides and stuff, I'll mention, I call him a friend of mine. I've met him through all the different podcaster conferences, but, Dr. Jonathan Singer, in Chicago, he's written a textbook that's highly regarded on suicide prevention, but, he's also the host of the Social Work Podcast, which has a big following whether people are social workers or not. It's good mental health information. He has some cool interviews on there. So he does a lot of current research on suicide prevention. He's really a great expert in that field. So
very cool. Yeah, so let's talk about some of the resources before we wrap up the show. I know the suicide hotline's there. There's other, you know, like for veterans and military folks, you know, we've got, God help us, the VA. We've got like chaplains, like if you're active duty military, you've got chaplains, you've got the mental health clinic, you've got, you know, all
they have
these
the
different,
also they have the EAP also, which I don't know if it's still military one source, but,
it is military one source. I was just about to say that. Yeah. Military one source. So what they did for me and my wife is they paid for 6 sessions of marriage counseling when my wife and I were good, when I was at the height of, like, we're getting divorced, I'm abusing alcohol, like, you know. So they gave us 6 free sessions of marriage counseling. They call up the military one source.
Yes, and that's what EAP is. It's employee assistance programs, and most corporate companies have them as well. So it's well worth it. You get between 3 and 8 sessions, depending on the plan. But I was going to say, like, for that, I know people get frustrated with the VA system and stuff. You know, go through military one source if you're really critical. Say, I need to see somebody now. I want to use the EAP and see what they can give you. And I know I used to be on that panel. I am a current TRICARE provider, so I do see military spouses and their families. In the community in San Diego, and I'm proud to be on that panel. What other resources, though, for anyone in the United States? You know, you can call your local 211 number, like the old 411 for information. You should be able to call 211 in your area, and that is a social services hotline. So you can say, you know, I'm looking for a therapist who deals with addictions, or I'm looking for an outpatient recovery program, or, you know, my teenager needs a therapist, and they can usually help coordinate and figure out what's available. And then if you have insurance, you call your insurance provider and see if there's providers on that list that match up. And then there's the other resource, right? You have insurance. So call your insurance provider, because so many people, and here's a tip too on that end, because I am an insurance provider on TRICARE, Aetna, and Cigna, and then I'm on some EAP panels. But my pet peeve is when people call me and they say, oh, you're the only one that called me back, or I called you from a list of therapists, you know. And, you know, there's so many of us out there that are doing so much that, you know, we put a lot of work into wanting to make sure our clients are a good fit for us when they call, for as much as we want to be a good fit for them, that So if you have insurance, call your insurance provider and say, I'm looking for a therapist that deals with these three things. If that's what you got, or depression, anxiety, or my relationship, look at those things and get five names, and then Google all those names and look at their websites and see what they're about. Mm-hmm. Are there videos out there? They're talking, so you can get an idea of what those people are like. Do they blog? So you get an idea of what their voice, you know, their therapy voice sounds like, even if it's written, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. do some research on that, because you owe it to yourself. Your emotional state of mind is a really precious, fragile thing. And you want to make sure you're going to someone that has training, the reputation, you know, that the current research, you know, behind them, so that you get some good treatment. And then you want to be able to like feel comfortable with that person. So there's always an About Me page on every therapist website. Many of us have blogs and podcasts. Well, not a lot have podcasts, but they're out there. But, you know, so I have a podcast, blog. We have videos on the website. And then there's even so I would tell people, do a little bit of research on that end. So 211, your insurance company, for a list of names, but then Google them. And you can always call your local. There's a national suicide prevention hotline, and then there's always going to be a local access, and it's called the access and crisis line, usually in your area, which is the local suicide hotline. And what those hotlines have are people who are sometimes licensed therapists, sometimes not, but they're trained in some basic counseling skills and basic counseling listening skills. And what they're there to do is just to intervene when somebody feels like they have absolutely no one to talk to at 2 a.m, you know, because you can't call your therapist no matter how good the work that you're doing with them is. You can't call them at 2 a.m. Right. Nobody's going to answer the phone. Right. So that's why those hotlines are good. And then they can pair you up with resources. I know with what's happened in, you know, the last week with a couple of public suicides, a lot of flack has been given for people thinking that, oh, well, we called the suicide hotline and, you know, and they called the police, you know. Well, they are mandated reporters and their job is to keep you safe. And I will guarantee you that your friend can be mad as anything at you because you called the suicide hotline for them and they called the police to get them safe. Let your friend be mad at you. At least they're not dead, you know? And I have personal experience with doing that to try to help someone before they actually did kill themselves, not a client. And you know, it is well worth the anger that they shed on you to have them alive again for at least a while.
Sure.
So to stop
right.
them from hurting themselves. So that is
absolutely.
That's the resources I can think of. And then support groups and things like that online, but you can find that from your 211 number.
Yeah. So let's do a shameless plug and plug you.
Yeah.
How can we get a hold of you? How can we get in contact with you and tell everybody, you know, where they can find you and all that?
Yes. Well, my main website is coachingthroughchaos.com. And if they're interested in my podcast, which is interviewing authors and experts in psychology, and I say stories of transition, that's Coaching Through Chaos, also on iTunes and Stitcher and every place else. I'm on social media. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter as Dr. Colleen Mullen on both of those. And I'm also right now just as of within 24 hours, just posted it, offering relationship coaching online. So my therapy practice is based in San Diego. My license to practice therapy is in California. So I am still taking new clients in California. But if people are interested in getting some relationship coaching, happy to do that online. And they can find my little post about that on Facebook and on Twitter today. You know, we'd love to know if any of your listeners find me online, you know, say hi and let me know what you thought of the interview.
Awesome. Very, very cool. I know that, you know, the relationship, you know, the counseling that we went through, you know, you always feel like you're being attacked. You always feel like, because you don't want to feel like you're the one doing things wrong. But, you know, sometimes just the fact of the matter is you are doing things wrong. So as we wrap up and close the show, can you deliver your best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action today?
Wow, that's okay. Yes. I'll say, you know, today is a great day to start. You know, you can always.
There you go.
Yesterday doesn't matter. It really doesn't. It's how much do you want, how much energy do you still want to give it today? And you can always change that level of energy. So, you know, it can be done. It doesn't matter how old you are right now listening to this. You can make a change. I started with a 67-year-old woman yesterday. Like, she's going to make change starting, like, she's already making changes because of reaching out. So it can happen. So it's never too late to start. Today's a great day to start.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a mindset, right? I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to self-worth and different things, but you know, that's what the therapists are there to determine. So, you know,
perfect. Right.
Well, thank you so much for being an absolutely amazing guest on the show. I learned a lot. This is kind of like with the resilient stuff and love the research and all that. So, yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Sean, for having me on. It really was a blast, and I hope your listeners found it helpful.
Oh, I'm sure they will. Oh, definitely. Definitely. So we can get in touch with you through the website, Coaching Through Chaos, Twitter, Facebook. Yes. I encourage all of the listeners, connect through there, and then just go check out the podcast. It's on, where's the podcast at besides iTunes? Anywhere else?
Oh, yeah. Stitcher, TuneIn, FM, and then there's also Shrink to Shrink. So it's Shrink with the number 2 Shrink. And that's on all the other podcast avenues as well. And that's a fun movie focused podcast. It's me and another therapist, and we take one movie a month and psychobabble about it. And it's a lot of fun. We've done that for a couple of years every month.
Oh, that's very cool. I'll have to check that out because I'm a huge movie buff. Like,
oh, well, you'll love it. I'll send you a few links.
Oh boy,
so you can listen to some of my favorite episodes.
As long as they're '80s and '80s movies, like I'm super like '80s kid. You know what I mean? So, yeah, way good.
Okay, I'll see what we have.
Awesome. Right? All right.
Yeah.
So, Life Transformation Radio listeners, another amazing guest, another impactful episode. If anything that Dr. Colleen Mullen said here today resonates with you, or you know somebody that is battling or struggling, and you're not sure how to reach out or what to say to them, contact Dr. Colleen Mullen and continue listening to what she has to say on her website, through the podcast. There's all these resources that she had named. Find one of the resources, get in touch with somebody to become educated in this area. So again, CoachingThroughChaos.com, and she's on Facebook and Twitter at Dr. Colleen Mullen. So as we close the show, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, have a great night.